I come here and speak to you all about listening for a while, but I'll listen to you after I'm done, if I get the chance. On March 11, 2005, police officer Kevin Briggs received a call on his radio that a young man was about to commit suicide by jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, and that was Briggs' job. He patrolled the one end of the bridge and dealt with lots of people every year, every day almost, of people, many per month, that were about to commit suicide by jumping off the bridge. So he receives a call that a young man is about to jump, and so he responded to the call on his motorcycle. He drove up the sidewalk. As he got close, he saw up ahead the young man who he identified as the one that had been caught in. So he parked his motorcycle and started heading toward him. And separating the sidewalk from the edge of the bridge is about a 32-inch rail. And as Officer Briggs walked up to toward the young man, his name was Kevin as well, Kevin Berthia, he saw the officer coming and scrambled over the rail and jumped. Well, Officer Briggs hollered, and instinctively, Berthia grabbed out and caught the edge of the rail and landed on a little bitty pipe on the other side. And there he stood. And he was about 220 feet above the water, 5 seconds away from death if he jumped. And he yelled out to Officer Briggs, "You come one step closer, I'm jumping." And so Briggs waited. And how would you respond to someone who is 5 seconds or 220 feet away from death? So Briggs responded. He said, "I won't grab or touch you. I just want to come talk." But Berthia was skeptical about that proposition, and so it was a standoff for a while, officer versus young man contemplating the troubles of life. And finally, he decided he wanted to talk. And so Officer Briggs stepped closer, and it was a terrible place for a conversation. It was cold. It was loud. Traffic's rushing by on the bridge, and it's windy. But for 1.5 hours, Berthia talked while Briggs listened. And finally, Berthia climbed back over the rail and aborted the suicide attempt. And Officer Briggs congratulated him, and eventually, later, he asked him, "What made you come back and give hope and life another chance?" And Berthia responded, "You listened. You let me speak, and you just listened." And later, Berthia went on to say, quoting from him, "That was the first conversation I ever had in my life." And he was in his lower 20s, I think. "The first opportunity I ever had to be literally heard. Things I wanted to get out of my heart. The opportunity to be heard was just huge for me. I never took the time to talk before about how I felt. By listening to me, Officer Briggs helped me to see my feelings do matter, and I needed to be there for my daughter. It was an uncomfortable position to be in, but a comfortable space to get things off my chest. Here was somebody accepting me for who I was based on the fact that he was taking time to listen to me." So is listening important? Can it be constructive, as the title implies today, constructive listening? That is, can it serve to advance, improve? Can it be helpful? And I think the Berthia Briggs story answers those questions. But I want to propose that there's very likely a Berthia in your life somewhere. Maybe it's at school, a teacher maybe, a student at school. Maybe it's someone in your work life, in the business, that needs your gift of a listening ear, needs someone to take the time to listen to them. And so that's what we're considering today, how we can listen constructively. So three main parts to the talk. The first one is going to be the basics of communication, a little bit on how communication works, even though we know very well how it works. Maybe there's some things we forget to consider. Second part is the problem, deaf ears. And then the third part, the solution to the problem, hearing aids. How can we fix our hearing deficit that we've got? So the basics, how and why we communicate. There's four main parts to every conversation. There's a speaker. There's the listener. And then between the speaker and the listener, there's the idea that they're trying to communicate. And then there's a medium to communicate that idea. Those are the four parts. And so, as we go about life, ideas develop in our minds. We read an article, or maybe listen to a podcast, or we have a conversation with friends or family members. We go to PSLI and get these great ideas that we can add to the ideas already floating. And eventually, we form these ideas that we want to share. So we have a brainchild that we want to communicate to someone else. Here's my brainchild. Here's my idea that I have floating around in my mind, and I want to give this to somebody else. Say, here, consider this. And so we have a conversation, and in one fell swoop, we hand it off and say, here it is. Did you get it? And they say, yeah, I got it, because they want to appear competent. Well, maybe they got it. Maybe they didn't. But yes, they say, it reminds me of a time when, and they go on to make sure they are appearing to have gotten your conversation. And well, eventually, time, we're always running short on time, and so we have to part ways, and you go your separate ways, and they leave with your idea. But both of you, in any given conversation, remember about half of the conversation. So we started with this, but on a normal conversation, you keep about half of it. Well, your phone rings, and it's somebody calling to talk to you, and phone companies these days give priority to data. Therefore, that's why we have so much trouble with good phone connections. But we're not considering that too much as far as assuming we have a good phone connection. You get a phone call and discuss an idea or a difficulty at school or wherever. And the problem now is that you're missing out on all the nonverbal signals that go along with the conversation. So you can still hear their tone of voice. That's good. But you're missing out on the nonverbal signals that go along with the speaker's emotions. And so you're now missing out on about 55% of the feeling of the message just because you cannot see the speaker's facial expression and gestures, etc. And so again, you get a phone call on the spot. Here's the idea. You're getting about this much just as it's being delivered, not worrying about the stuff you'll forget anyway as soon as the phone call ends. So again, you're at about 55% of the message on a phone call. But at least you hear their tone of voice. Take this a step further. Get an email or a text message. You're now robbed of another 38% of the speaker's emotions. So when you're getting a phone call or a text, now we started out with a bright idea, and we're down to this much of the emotions getting transferred through tech. And since on a good day you remember half of what you receive, you're left with about 3.5% of what the speaker intended to communicate. And so the idea, the conversation, the emotion you're trying to transmit, here's what you're left with. Is it any wonder that we have miscommunications, misunderstandings, situations handled on a school level or whatever? Because how are we communicating? Many of our conversations are via text or email, perhaps. But that's not our talk today. We're not going to go into that side of it. Although now would be a good time to mention that if you are handling a tricky school situation, text or email is not a great way to handle it. And be assured, if you try to handle it that way, you'll probably be disappointed and have more misunderstandings resolved. So how do we change this from 3.5% to back to what the original message that we intended was? How can we increase that? That's our subject today. And there's different ways we could fix this problem. We could work with the speaker to articulate his ideas more clearly. We can improve the medium. As suggested, switch from text or email and have a face-to-face conversation. That will help. Or we could train our ears and our minds to listen more carefully. And that's our topic today, to focus on that aspect of it. So you may be surprised in a day's time how many conversations you have. One day I counted, just picked one day where I had a fair amount of interaction with different people, and I was preparing for this talk, so I counted. And I talked to one board member, 3 patrons from school, 16 students, 5 co-teachers, 2 family members, a neighbor, 4 business people. That's a total of 32 people. And that was kind of an average day. If you're a businessman, you're probably talking to a lot more people than that, your employees and customers and so on. But did I listen carefully to all 32 people as I should have that day? Well, no, I didn't. In fact, in just one of those conversations, because I was rushed and thought I understood what I was hearing, I made a mistake that resulted in a huge waste of money and time, mileage, gas, wasted some other people's time because of this. And so it proves the point that careful listening is important, but doesn't happen automatically. Instead, it needs to be trained into one's life. But 2, the need to listen is deeper than just a financial aspect. The introduction, the story of Officer Briggs and Berthia proves that. It goes a whole lot deeper than just money and physical things like that. So Siri or Alexa are always ready to listen to you. In fact, maybe always are listening to you. Better yet, your dog will listen happily as long as you take the time to share with him. If you do that, he'll wag his tail happily and listen. But Siri and Alexa, your dog, are not listening to understand. In Japan, there's this growing idea of renting a listener for a day. And companies will link you up with a partner whom you will pay money to, and their job is simply just to listen to you. So a mother can rent a son to vent her frustrations to for the day. A bachelor can rent a wife and share the frustrations of housekeeping. And there's nothing sexual about these relations. It's simply you're renting someone to listen to you. And it's popular. It's a popular idea. So when someone gives us a gift of a listening ear, it helps give us a sense of worth, and that's why these people pay money for that. We feel important when someone listens. And so listening is more than just hearing words. It's about understanding someone. And don't we all have that need to be understood? Which is why we're so quick to share our piece, and listening falls by the wayside. Paul Grice, a British philosopher, sums up in 4 points the expectations that we bring to any given conversation. The 4 expectations are, first, quality. We expect truth in a conversation and phase out quickly if we don't feel like we're receiving the truth from the other person. Second expectation is quantity. We expect to get information we don't already know, but not so much that we feel overwhelmed. 3, we expect relation, that is relevance and logical flow in a conversation. And the 4th one is manner. We expect the speaker to be orderly and unambiguous. So truth, in every conversation we expect truth, new information, relevance, clarity. And you can very likely think very quickly of times when any 4 of these were violated in a conversation you had. But with our focus today, we're thinking, how can I as a listener overcome these challenges that may not be in the conversation? How can I listen well in spite of these things lacking? And so while it takes practice to develop a listening ear, it doesn't take very much practice to know if someone is listening to you or not. I'm sure you've experienced it. I heard of a child who repeatedly was flushing his parents' phones down the toilet, and not other things, just their phones, because he knew what was getting his parents' attention. And so he was trying to deal with the problem by flushing it away. And so we know at a very young age if we have the attention or not of the person to whom we are speaking. In a business world, Emily Wright says that when people listen to one another, there's many advantages. Here's a few that she mentions. It establishes trust, prevents problems, improves connections, increases participation, encourages teamwork, boosts productivity. That's in a business, but can't you see how those items would apply to your team at school, maybe, with faculty, or on a board level? And so the listening ear is a valuable but too often rare commodity at home, work, wherever people are. There's four main types of listening. One is comprehensive listening, in which you listen to learn or comprehend something. That's the type of listening that would most apply to right now, as you listen to learn or comprehend. Second type of listening is empathetic listening. Listening to understand a speaker's emotions, whether they're positive or negative. This is the one we'll be spending most of our time on, as it relates most closely to our context here of listening to students, school faculty, board members, whoever. And then the third one is critical listening. That could apply here too, could also apply to a meeting in which you're listening to evaluate or critique what the ideas that the speaker is sharing. Fourth category of listening is appreciative listening, in which you listen to something for pleasure's sake, like inspirational talks or music. So that is a brief summary of communicating and how these parts fit together. So the second part now is the problem, deaf ears, that is, barriers to listening. What is it that's keeping us from hearing or from truly listening to the people around us? The first barrier to listening, and I've got 15 that we're just going to breeze over pretty quickly because many of these you'll identify with immediately. And so we'll just acknowledge these and then we'll go to the next part in which we discuss hearing aids, that is, cures to these barriers. So the first barrier is external distractions. You've probably been talking to someone and over here you hear another conversation going on. Maybe you hear your name. That'll sure jerk you away from this conversation. Maybe you hear some key words that immediately pique your interest and suddenly this speaker has lost your interest and you're trying to listen to this one too and juggle between the both of them maybe. So that's an external distraction. Your phone maybe buzzes in your pocket. Crying children in a big group of maybe a sermon you're trying to listen to at church and children crying can distract you. Maybe it's the climate in the room. It's too hot or the sun shining in your eyes. Last night it was my son fiddling with the speaker up in the front corner of the gym. And he started turning the knob, and I knew it was going to happen next. The speaker would drop to the floor, and instantly he had my full attention, and the speaker didn't anymore. The second barrier is internal distractions. Now, these mesh some because very quickly external distractions can turn into an internal distraction. Maybe it's your mental to-do list. you've got a flight to catch this afternoon, and so you're thinking of what needs to be done as soon as this talk is over so that things flow smoothly to make it possible to go catch your flight. Maybe it's difficulty at work or at home. Our brains can easily outrun a speaker's mouth. And so we think we can run down some bunny trails here and there while the speaker drones on. And so internal distractions. The third one is limited time. We rush hither and yon, and we're trying to be efficient, and so we try to listen efficiently and quickly get it over with. After all, we've got miles to go before we sleep, and this mile sure is creeping by slowly because the person drones on and on, we think. And so also as part of this, the limited time factors, sometimes we catch a phrase that someone says that we agree with, maybe, but we know there's something more there than we understood, but well, I don't really have time to go there, so I'll let it drop. Or this also applies to the part about wanting to appear competent, and so we'd sure hate to for the screen to get blown away there, so we laugh heartily along with them. But that's a barrier to good listening. If we pretend to agree with what's going on and don't quite get it, but well, time is limited, and so we go on. Another barrier to listening is arrogance. There was a group of people who met back in the 1920s. They were called the Algonquin Round Table, and they met for lunch every day to engage in witty conversation. And indeed it was mealtime conversation at its best. Yet the group of people was a depressed, lonely bunch of people. They weren't listening to each other, actually. They were just there to impress one another, and as Kate Murphy says about them, they were just waiting for an opening, for someone to take a breath so they could lob their verbal firecrackers. And so arrogance is a barrier to good listening. The next one, number five, is familiarity with one another. Meeting like this, we meet new people, and we ask questions about their lives. Where do you live, and what's your role in the community? What's your job? Try to find interesting things out about their lives. But as we become more familiar with someone, we think we know them, and so we become less inquisitive, learning less about their daily lives. The sixth one is lack of training is a barrier to listening well. Active listening, as I've alluded to before, does not come naturally always and must be trained into one's life. Seventh barrier is fear of conversational risk. Talking feels risky sometimes, but so does listening. And feeling or listening to people's emotions can be very exhausting. And so we sometimes approach a conversation with the fear that we might get roped into a situation that we'd rather not go there. And so we leave it at that, and it's a barrier. Just hearing them well. Number eight is a physical barrier, and one we won't talk about later. It's hearing loss. If you can't hear well, that's obviously a barrier to listening well. And so the solution there, I guess, is just get hearing aids, and you probably that will be a benefit to you and those around you. The ninth barrier is cultural differences. Someone may come across as being rude or uncaring, indifferent, so on, just simply because of varying cultural expectations. The tenth barrier is confirmation bias, which is a term that refers to forming conclusions about what the speaker is saying before they're done talking. So before we've received all the information, we think we know what's going on and begin planning a response, when actually, maybe not. We might not have gotten the full idea yet. 11, short attention spans are a barrier to listening well. The average American has about a 10-second span, and that's maybe a stretch. But after that, you've lost it. It's a barrier to listening. The 12th one is cognitive distortions, which refers to incorrect beliefs or ideas we've formed as a result of life's experiences, which causes us to become prejudiced to our own way of thinking, and we close our minds to ideas of other people. The 13th one, unrealistic expectations. We sometimes assume a speaker has a higher, we assume the speaker or listener has a higher level of emotional intelligence than his maturity level allows for, and so when our expectations aren't met, we begin phasing out and feel like we're not connecting. 14, I've borrowed from the French, faute mot juste. Mot juste refers to the exactly correct wording or phrase, and sometimes it's hard to lay hands on the exact wording that would fit the occasion. So we can't quite express our idea because of faulty mot juste. That hinders our conversations. The 15th one is a daily routine. There's a story of Edison. He worked in Cincinnati at a newspaper office, and one day they looked out and saw crowds gathering on the sidewalks, and something was obviously going on, and so they sent a messenger boy out to inquire and find out what was going on. And he came back and said, "Lincoln's been shot." And immediately, all the telegraph operators began looking at each other, knowing that one of them had typed out the message, but none of them knew who it was. And so they did some research, and the one operator, sure enough, had received the message, "Lincoln's been shot," went into the newspaper, and they sent it out to the street, and the people began reading it, and the news was out. And so this can happen. So the daily routine, we just get used to what's going on around us and become numb to the events surrounding our daily lives. Significant events occurring in people's lives right around us we can miss because of this. So there's 15. Is it any wonder that we have trouble hearing one another or truly listening to one another sometimes? So that brings us now to the third part, the solution. I already said if you can't hear well physically, get hearing aids. Well, we're going to talk now about some hearing aids. James 1:19 says, "Let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak." Too often we get that flipped around. And we have the propensity to talk. We've got answers. We've got knowledge and wisdom, and we'd like to appear competent. And so you've all heard the advice, very likely. You may have given it to your children. We say, "Think before you speak." And often that's a way to filter what comes out. But I think that's good advice. Wait before you speak. One person said, in reference to the word wait, to use that as an acronym and say, "Why am I talking?" when you begin to talk. And so I want to use that same word as an acronym because I believe there's four principles contained there in the word wait, because so often that's the major part that keeps us from listening, is we speak instead of listening. So wait to talk. And so I think that's the single best way to become a better listener is wait. Listen instead. So listening takes wisdom. It demands your full attention, which is motivated by your interest in what the person has to say, and requires testing to ensure you heard correctly. And so there I just gave you the four important aids to listening well. Wisdom. Attention. Interest and testing. So that's the four areas that we'll look at here more specifically. Wisdom has to do with listening with your heart. Attention is listening with your mind. interest. It's listening with your emotions and testing is asking questions, critiquing what you heard. And so talking first about wisdom, listening with your heart, wisdom is the ability to discern inner qualities and relationships. It's the idea of insight. This is the preparation part of listening, preparing ahead of time, and comes with experience. Officer Brigg, who we talked about in the introduction, his advice on listening, in reference to the same story I told, he said, if someone is talking to you, let them talk. Don't interrupt. Use minimal encouragers like, wow, or really, and so on. It takes experience. As I said, we're born hearing, but we're not born listeners. That part must be developed. Ralph Nichols, who's a professor of rhetoric at the University of Minnesota, said, listening well is a matter of continually asking yourself if the people's messages are valid and what their motivations are for telling you whatever they are telling you. He continues, when engaged in any kind of dispute, listen for evidence that you might be wrong rather than listening to poke holes in the other person's argument. It requires a certain generosity of spirit. But if you remain open to the possibility that you might be wrong, or at least not entirely right, you'll get far more out of the conversation. Wisdom tells us not to approach every conversation with buckets of answers. The person we're talking to, as I mentioned before, often just needs a listening ear, and so if we immediately jump in with solutions, that's a sure way to quickly shut them down. Too often we approach conversations with the fear of appearing incompetent, and so we feel obliged to provide answers to prove that we are. And don't approach conversations with that mindset. We don't have all the answers, but we do have the capability to work for an answer. And the answer might be mined through the ensuing conversation. So that's a mind shift of, I have the answers to, let's work toward one here as I listen you out. Tune your ears to sensitive listening. That's a part of wisdom. Scientists say, and they've proven, that elephants can hear approaching clouds. And I want to posit that you can hear approaching clouds too in the lives of people around you. If you're listening for it, though, your ears have to be tuned very sensitively to catch that stuff coming on sometimes. So does this mean you'll never speak? Well, of course not. It just means you're going to wait for the right time to speak. That's wisdom. After you've gained the person's trust and assessed the situation carefully, you're waiting to speak until they show signs of being ready to listen. But wisdom tells us, too, that listening is hard work. Air traffic controllers are limited to two-hour shifts because of this very fact. An air traffic controller listens intensely, assesses and responds to intense situations. And so you'll do well to recognize the same thing in your own life and prepare for that. And so what I mean specifically here is to know your limits and schedule time frame if necessary. Schedule another conversation with the person. Say, you know, let's take a break and come back and talk about this later. So small talk can be another way to take a break in your conversation. Sometimes it feels like a waste of time, but it can be have a valuable place in conversation. So that's wisdom, listening with your heart. Second is attention. Attention has to do with the act or state of applying the mind to something. One reason attention is such a rare commodity today is because of the proliferation of distractions via the tech in our pockets. And researchers say that on average, an average American receives 65 to 80 phone notifications per day. It might be a text message or a message to let you know that Amazon arrived with your package, or an email, and you know what they are. So that's, if we use that math, 65 to 80 notifications per day, the average American is receiving a notification about once every 15 minutes during their waking hours. And even if we don't pull the phone out of our pocket, if it buzzes, immediately our mind's going to work, considering who needs my attention now, or what went wrong on the job or at school. And then we go on pretending to listen to the person in front of us as we also mull over what's going on in our pocket. So too often we're like a group of preschoolers playing in a sandbox. Everyone's chattering, but no one's listening, because no one has time to listen. Ask any marriage partner to rate themselves on their listening skills. And of course, my wife just stepped in, but have them rate themselves on their listening skills, and they will probably rate themselves as a decent listener. But ask them to repeat back to their spouse a recent conversation they had, and very likely they won't score so well, at least on every aspect of the conversation. So you've all probably listened to your wife and grunted at the right times and thought you were doing a good job. And then a few minutes later, you ask a question that blows the cover, and she says, "I just told you that 5-10 minutes ago." So our attention is necessary for a conversation. Multitasking is a myth. We might think we can check emails while we talk to someone or listen to someone, but if we're really going to pick up on the subtleties of conversation, it takes our attention, our full attention. So if you cannot give your full attention to someone, tell them that and reschedule another conversation. Give them a spot on your schedule in which you can leave your phone in your car and maybe your mental to-do list and whatever else, and give them all of your attention. So our complete attention is a rare gift that is desperately needed in many people's lives around you. Honor those around you by giving them your attention. Listen to them as if you're a news reporter, carefully collecting information. But then the analogy stops there. Don't share it, of course, like you would as a news reporter. But listen with that mindset. Andy Andrews says, "The single most important conversation you're having in the entire day is the one you're having right now." That's a good rule of thumb to remember. Third point, interest. Now we're talking about a state of curiosity or concern about, and I want to include in this point, empathy. I once read of a family who boarded a foreign exchange student for several months, and he was a reticent young man, partly due to the language barrier, probably. But he never talked much, ever, and he just listened to the family converse at mealtime and in the living room after meals and so on. And right before he left to return home, he went out and bought each of the family members a personalized gift suited to their personal interests. He knew what was important to every single member of that family because for the last 6 months or whatever, he had just listened to them talk. And so do you know what is important to those around you, your spouse or children, school staff, so on? Do you know what their interests are, their current concerns? You probably think you do, but then you're off visiting with friends and your spouse says something to the people you're visiting with and you say, "Wait, I never knew that before." Well, you're the one that wasn't showing interest in that part of her life, and so of course you don't know. She may have told you and you just didn't hear it, or maybe you never probed for it because you didn't have the interest in that part of her life. Researchers have discovered that children who have a mother who takes the time to listen to their endless chatter, and without challenging them always even, just listening, those people are better equipped to solve problems later on in life than those who did not have that listening ear. So everyone is unique. Recognize that and probe for the things that interest them. To assume everyone shares your particular interests is a good way to shut down a conversation as well. showing others, showing interest in the work field can be tricky, and this could include if you're a businessman or on the school board duties and so on. Time is money, and you can't just spend the day sitting around listening to your colleagues or employees or school staff. But remember, people want to be heard. In fact, need to be heard, and if that's not happening, they'll look for another boss who does listen. And so time is money, but time spent in small talk and deeper. While your employee is on the clock or while you're chatting with the school teacher during normal work hours, that's time well spent. It's an investment that will pay off. So listening with empathy also requires emotional intelligence, which is the ability, a definition of emotional intelligence that I copied down here, is the ability to perceive, interpret, demonstrate, control, evaluate, and use emotions to communicate with and relate to others effectively and constructively. We must learn to understand our own emotions and then use those skills to help others consider and evaluate, understand their emotions. Point four, testing. Testing is a critical examination to put to test or proof. How do we test someone? Well, by asking questions. Darren Hardy says it this way: communication is the response you get, not the response you were hoping for. So responses result from this testing process. And there's three main parts I'd like to touch on here with the testing process. The first part is, what did you say? You're reflecting the speaker's words back to them to ensure you're speaking the same language and didn't inadvertently interject your own point of view or your own opinion of what they said. So this might sound like this. So you're saying that, or did I understand correctly when you said thus and so? So resist the urge to attack their wording. We've all done it. You jump in and critique someone's comment on a matter, maybe facetiously or maybe unkindly, and they respond. In the latter case, with irritation, they say, "You know what I meant," and you probably did. But find out, what are they saying? And then two, why are they saying it? Here we're reading between the lines, getting to the heart of the matter. So often a person's actual words are just Morse code, shouting that they need help here in some way. And your job is to decode that language and find out, what are they really saying? And why are they saying it? And then the third part of this is a question for myself. How can I guide them to an answer? You might know the answer to the other party's distressful situation, but to just dump it in their lap will be less effective than working them through to an answer. Elie Wiesel, in his book Night, writes, "Every question possesses a power that is lost in the answer. Man comes to God through the questions he asks him. Therein lies true dialogue." Don't extinguish conversation with answers. Don't disrespect the person to whom you're speaking to by implying by your wise words that they have nothing to offer to the situation. So wait. Bring to every conversation wisdom, attention, interest, and testing. There's your acronym to memorize and put to practice as you listen to people talk this afternoon, maybe. And I'm about to release you to do that. Our time is up. Dick Bass was an accomplished mountaineer back in the 1900s. And he was the first man to successfully climb the seven summits, which is the highest peak in every continent, all seven of them. And he enjoyed immensely detailing his wild adventures to anyone who would just listen to him. So one time on a cross-country flight, he sat beside a man on an airplane who listened wonderfully well. So he proceeded to fill the man's ears with information of his incredible adventures on Mount Everest and Denali and excursions in the Himalayas and so on. And they were incredible tales of adventure, of success, and sometimes close calls to death. But finally, as the plane approached the runway for landing, the thought crossed his mind that he never had asked his traveling companion what his name was, and he apologized for it. And he said, "I'm sorry about my oversight, but I never did ask you your name." And his obliging companion responded, "That's okay. I'm Neil Armstrong. Nice to meet you."